Hi, this is Ryan Dawson of ANC Report. My repeat guest today is Joaquin Flores. We're going to be talking about Greece and, the crisis there and the bailouts they rejected and the whole history there. But first, I have a curious question I have for you about an NGO. I heard you started a new one, or president of a new NGO for journalists.
Yeah, I was brought in. There's one based in Berlin called the Independent Journalists Association for Peace. I didn't start it. It was started some time ago, but after a Vienna conference, the executive board of the NGO tapped me to do it. They had like a change up of leadership and thought I would be good for it because of my commitment to not objectivity, but to including as many different subjective opinions as possible, because I don't really have an axe to grind. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've got a battle to fight, but I don't see things in terms of ideology and things like that, right? So,
one of us have a stake in Greece, really. I live in Japan. Exactly. As an American, it's not going to, but I'm curious for justice sake.
Right. I mean, I have an interest in events in the world, and things that happen in Greece are, up to Greeks to resolve. Of course, they're being interfered with, but we'll get into that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Journalist for Peace. That's perfect for you, actually. From the previous programs, when we've talked about Ukraine and other things, exactly what you're doing. So I hope that all works out. Now, I got to ask you about Greece, because for people who have not been following it, it's confusing. The whole euro itself, the idea of having 19 countries share a currency, to me, is kind of retarded, to put it bluntly. I don't understand how suddenly everybody can use the same currency. I mean, just within very large countries like the United States, you'll have the Northeast, which is more industrialized and has higher wages, but everyone on the same dollar. What happens is you'll have people, working the same amount of hours as people, let's contrast like Alabama and New York City or something. In New York, a Coke could cost near or more than $3. In Alabama, it'd be $1.25 or so. People can work this exact same amount of hours, and it won't really matter if they're going to buy a Coke, because the cost of, driving to Alabama would be more than that. But when you're buying big things like land or a house or property, it matters a lot, because the people are working exact same amount of time, but they're gathering a lot more dollars in the areas where there's high rates of inflation, and all they have to do is move down. They can still use the same currency and buy a property and things, and that's a problem in the United States. But it's a lot worse when you're contrasting countries that just said, one day we'll all use the same currency, but that doesn't magically level out the economies in all these places. So I think that was a problem to begin with, but I want your two cents on it. What exactly has gone wrong with Greece? They owe a lot of money. They rejected a bailout. Please explain.
Right. Well, what you were talking about with the United States, in a way, almost reminded me of like carpetbagging, things like that. I mean, you basically can get into an economically devastated area, whether it's by war or inflation or mismanagement, and then with the same currency come in and bite things up. And that's kind of something that we've seen a lot happen in Greece, where Germans and French and Danes, people with foreign capital, can have easy access to higher earning rates or higher investment rates on euros, and then come into Greece and buy things up. And a lot of Greek things are already foreign owned. So that's an important point to make. How this whole kind of mess got started, I mean, it depends on how you can go way back. You can go far back to the end days of the Ottoman Empire, and where the British basically installed a new line of Greek monarchs in the 19th century. I mean, that's getting into it. But of course, like, we know that the British are highly involved in banking and in like a certain type of central banking that's not really a public asset, but it's like a for-profit institution. And there's nothing wrong with like making an honest buck, nothing wrong with investment, a little profit and things like that. It's a decent incentive for like most people. But we're talking about economies of scale and levels of capital that one would normally consider to be a public asset. So it's like roads and hospitals and things like that. you know, there are arguments about privatization versus public utility. And these are the kind of the arguments that are affecting that are going on in Greece. So I'm just going to like describe the what the argument is. So basically, what in long story short was you go back about 15 years, and Greece had very low debt. They had a very healthy debt to GDP ratio. They owed less than $1 billion, and this was coming on the heels of the introduction of the euro dollar, like in 99. Forgive me if I'm wrong by a year. But when Greece became like a full member of the EU, they waived their sovereignty on economic front, which, as we know, as like the famous saying goes, I don't care about the politics. I'm going to paraphrase, but I have no interest in the politics. Give me control of the banking and I'm in control of the country. And so basically the ECB, which is the European Central Bank, transformed Greece's central bank into little more than an institution that basically observes euro emissions and regulates some insurance companies. So it's actually just like, I don't know what state in the U.S. you're from, but you know, most states have like a attorney general, and then they have like a state insurance commissioner. And an insurance commissioner in a bank is a really different job in a lot of ways. And so what the old Central Bank of Greece has been transformed into is just not at all banking. So to kind of get back to the question, so they started taking on increasing debt. This gets into the, when you say they, that is the really problematic issue, because we're talking about how media.
Yeah, Greek ends up with the debt, but who made the decision to take on this unpayable debt?
Exactly. These are elected officials whose election campaigns were based upon a lot of economic illiteracy. So you basically had a similar situation to what's used in the U.S., where a lot of like wedge issues, identity politics are used to confuse people. So you had, and I'm not saying that these are not important issues to people. I'm just describing objectively how the wedge issues were used. So you had a lot
of
people
unrelated to economics, and what people will do is they'll say, well, if you identify with X, you need to vote for this economic policy, when it's a lie.
That's absolutely right. And basically what there was a controlled discourse. There was virtual unanimity between the so-called left and the so-called right, which in Greece is different from the U.S., first of all, but we'll just use the words that they're used. And the left and the right in Greece basically are fake left and fake right, so to speak. And they promoted candidates who basically talked about economic theory, like normative economics, as economic theory, as if it was positive economics, as if it was referring to actual reality. And that's a big thing that's used in when you go to economic school and you learn normative economics. But when you become a salesman, you speak about it like it's positive economics. So there's a big difference between normative and positive economics. Anyway, and in short, in positive economics, you're talking about things that have already happened. And even then, things that already happened are not evidence of things that, I mean, they're evidence, but it's not proof that you're going to get the same results in the future. And then normative economics is basically like theory, you know. So there's a lot of theory involved, but these people basically colluded on the left and the right. We're talking about basically the conservatives and social democrats basically colluded to agree that they're going to promote the same type of talking heads to talk about euro integration like it's a good thing, to talk about taking on debt like it's a good thing, because they lied to people and basically said like, well, the same way that you could borrow like $10,000 and start a little small business, and then you're going to pay it back. You know, you're going to make money from your business, and you're going to pay back the loan. Seems innocent enough. But they were borrowing money to pay for services, which are social institutions, which only when you look at a broad economy of scale, right, where a lot of sort of, I guess you could say, expenses are externalized.
Well, the better analogy, to stick with your old analogy, instead of borrowing 10 grand for a business and then expanding your business and gathering capital and paying it back, this is more like buying 10 grand to go shopping, which you can't pay back.
You can't pay back. Yeah. And then they started to lend money to buy debt. So and one thing that they started doing was saying, like, for example, if you have, let's say you have two credit cards, let's say you have like a Visa card and you've got like an 8% rate and you've got like an American Express card that's got like a 6% rate. Well, then you'd be smart to take your Amex card to pay off your Visa bill, and you've knocked 2 percentage points off, and that's compound interest. So you might save a lot of money if you owed a lot. But what was happening in Greece is that they were being lent money to repay debts that, in a way that, well, I'm going to like simplify it. Sometimes the rates were better, but actually they were selling off the very same assets that would be required in the long term to bring in the revenues to pay off the debt. So they were losing the rights to the actual, it's kind of like
short-term gain, but in long-term is the worst because you lost your revenue producing asset.
Precisely. And that's basically what happened to Greece. And it really started, like I said, 15 years ago, but things really got into high gear with the madness with the United States, when the mortgage and home housing market bubble burst. So you had the whole scandal with the credit default swaps.
Mortgage-backed
security frauds, credit default swaps, and all that, right? So you had all these like toxic
multi-credit ratings. Yeah.
Precisely. They were repackaged and they were sold to European central banks as if they were good assets when they were toxic. So then basically also the other thing is that as you know, when you're talking about several dozen countries that have the same currency and it's all being managed by a European Central Bank, you can kind of put things off into different columns and you can say, well, this is owed by so-and-so and this is owed by so-and-so, even though it's not. I mean, it's all column A, column B, column C. So even though, so they what they did is it's an Orwellian term. They call it Greek sovereign debt, like as if Greek is sovereign and it's owning of the debt, but it is actually a lack of sovereignty for Greece that got them into the debt crisis. And it was their politicians. Their politicians that agreed for it to be called Greek debt when Greece wasn't even the local point of the debt. The debt was American debt that was sold. And it wasn't even, I'm not talking about American people debt. I'm talking about, again, the securities fraud and the mortgage.
They sold them some of those CDOs.
right, exactly. Yes. So it was basically a Ponzi scheme that then that Greece.
It's worse than a scheme. It's not just trickery. It's criminal because those CDOs had faulty ratings that were based on bribes. And of course, they're legalese way out of it saying, well, the horrible rating is just because we really suck at our job. It's not actually illegal, but it's definitely illegal. Right. Yeah.
Yes, it is. And it's also an issue of what happened with Greece was that the debts that were being accrued in their name were in the ledgers, but they were not actual monies that were going into the Greek economy. So you talk about 300 something billion, maybe 20 or 40 billion ended up circulating through the Greek economy in some way. But of course, it didn't really get into like your average Greek person's hands. A lot of the discourse revolving around austerity and these things is actually would never pay the debt. So all the talk about if Greece restructures its social spending or if it changes its VAT tax or anything that they do is almost completely unrelated. It's almost completely fictional. And
that's a good point. I want to interject something here because I know some people are like biting their lips. As you said in the beginning, you're being objective about this. I think from ideology, there are some people that just think, well, you know what? You're living beyond your means. You bought too much crap. Yeah, you can't afford it. Tough. You deserve austerity. But that wasn't the situation. It wasn't just they bought a bunch of cool cars or whatever. That's a minor little thing, people buying German cars and things. It was being lied to about these CDOs and getting roped into these securities that were based on fraud that accumulated a lot of debt. And then, of course, as you're explaining earlier, the secondary loans and stuff, are still just exacerbating it because they ended up selling their profit or their assets that were producing revenue to do it. It's like me selling my shop to pay for my car or something,
Exactly.
And then selling that to pay for it. Yeah. So that becomes a Ponzi scheme. And then the other side too, we'll talk about Germany in a minute, but I'll let you continue because I know that I've heard that plenty of times because that's kind of the ideology. Because there are people who get into debt because they buy stupid stuff, but that wasn't the case here. They were getting services. They needed to invest in revenue. But it seems like the politicians really sold them down the river there.
That's the thing too, that last point you just made, because I think that there is a case to be made when an individual bites off more than they can chew. And if you take it is ideology in liberal theory. So from the Anglo school of philosophy, individuals are rational decision makers. And so we make rational decisions about life, including taking on debt or whatever. But financiers and banks don't think that that really matters. They look at base psychology, and if you dangle goodies in front of somebody, the little baby's gonna jump and want it. And if you lend someone money, most of the time they're gonna want to borrow it. And most people think in the now. And while it would be great if we could somehow raise a whole global culture of individuals who refuse to borrow money or something like that.
That would be like Japan. They don't even use credit cards almost ever, and they don't have checks. Like, they never do.
Wow. Yeah, I've never had a credit card personally.
But it's because of the huge bubble bursting in 89 that now everybody hoards money and they won't spend it and they won't borrow it. They're like, why? If I can't pay for it, then I can't have it. Like, that's their idea.
I like that idea. I mean, I live by that motto. But banks know that they've also created a whole consumer culture. And I'm just talking about individual. So just allow me the 30 seconds. That's individuals. Mm-hmm. Now, but that and now you can make the argument, and I'm just saying the argument is made and it has it's a internally coherent argument that an individual makes decisions and they're responsible for it. Like, one can make that argument. In Greece, this is not the case. Because the politicians that, by the same liberal theory, which I guess we could say is really libertarian, so to speak, but by the same liberal theory that I don't have a right to make a decision that's going to affect you, you see, and that's like moral hazard if it's an investment. And so what governments did is kind of engage in a form of moral hazard. And what they also did is they said, we represent you, and we're going to make decisions that we could not make for someone else and that you could not make for us. But because we call it government, we're going to make this decision on your behalf. And so that mechanism was used. So it was basically a government decision that was made, and the people are having to pay the consequence. The government actually, as by definition, does not produce wealth. So they are the one, but they are the ones that made the decision to take on the debt, but they're not the ones that are being asked to tighten up their belts or whatever these stupid expressions are to pay the money back. The second point also is that the money will never get paid back. This is about sovereignty and social psychology. This is about changing a culture and having it completely change from the inside. The money is fictional. No one needs the money. In fact, they could print more because they have. The 350 something billion that would say solve the Greek credit crisis, European Union could print that tomorrow, and that would only be like one fraction of quantitative easing one that the United States did in 2007, 2008 that Bush and Obama agreed to, so to speak. I mean, that was what, 700 billion, but the fine print said times infinity. Then there was QE2, QE3, QE limited, whatever. Greece is still on this thing.
Plus the secret bailout from the Fed.
Plus, right. So that's what we have in Greece. So now if you wanted to get into what the new government is doing and what they did, that's like a whole other can of worms. But that's kind of the background of why Greece is in so-called trouble. The quality of life, so I can just sort of summarize, has not improved in Greece. The time of the military dictatorship with all of its like bad things, there was very low unemployment and they had almost no inflation. And then within 8 years of the collapse of the military dictatorship, which again, I'm not being ideological, I do not condone and I do not condemn, I just describe it. And it was within 8 years of the introduction of parliamentary democracy, where you had people promising the sky. That's when their inflationary cycle began, and it culminated in 2001 with when their debt, which was about 500 to 800 million euros, then ballooned over 300 times. It's like a 3,000% or 30,000% increase, or it's not, you know, excuse my decimals, but it's it's a lot, right? More than you could ever. And you would think that it would, you know, you would think that you would go into Greece and then see that, you know, everyone's got like a $4,000 a month pension when they retire at age 39, and they're driving a brand new Beamer with the money they're talking about. But it all transferred through Greek oligarchs back into their Northern European counterparts, and right back into Swiss banks, right back to Dubai, to Qatar, to Saudi Arabia. I mean, it's international finance, investment markets, and it was just happened to use Greece as a proxy. So a lot of this is like a song and dance. It's like a hologram.
Well, the problem with parliamentary democracy or any kind of democracy usually is that the politicians, the elected ones, are up for the highest bidder. It's a giant auction. And the problem with democracy in Greece is the highest bidders aren't Greek.
Right. That's the thing. The highest bidders are not Greek. Greek cannot afford democracy in the representative parliamentary sense. And also, if you're going to try... There's no perfect system, probably, if people have ideals like that are very, you know, well-based ideals. But if you're going to have some kind of representative democracy, probably, and this is just me being hypothetical, probably can't exceed what they've been delegated the powers to do. So they probably can't make, you know, decisions beyond what they've been delegated from their platform. So in other words, people should be electing platforms. And they don't even know why they would need individuals to make extra decisions. You could just, nowadays with like cell phones and unique ISPs, you could arrange a system that people could directly vote, probably not even have most of these politicians sitting there. But
well, that's what Mike Gravel brought up during the presidential elections in the U.S. I think it for the Americans too. There's always referendums through the state. That seems to be how they. That's how they legalized homosexual marriage and marijuana prior to the Supreme Court's decision on homosexual marriage. States had already done that through referendum, and I think if people were more active in that process and had more referendums, those are based on, you know, actual participation in direct democracy rather than funneling through the filter of plutocrat-owned media.
Right, but, exactly.
When you said earlier about the new government, do you mean as of like last February with the
Syriza. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the thing is that was very strange is that a lot of people who were supporting this government, mostly now within Greece, it was actually people supported it across the political spectrum because they were just fed up and with the old government, and they believed in the promises that were being made. Internationally, a lot of the people supporting it were kind of on the left, somewhere on the left, social democratic left, all the way to the far left, like statist left and anti-statist left. So like anarchists and communists both had some sort of, you know, I would say that they supported Syriza, but they also were aware that they could sell out. So there was a lot of hopeful idealism, and people keep getting trolled. I guess the word is trolled over and over by hopeful idealism that they hope for change. So,
well, they're always couched, like you said, in identity politics. That's going on right now with U.S. housing, fair housing. They're couching it in a fight against racism. Fighting racism would be great if that's what they're actually doing, but it's about as sincere as the U.S.'s humanitarian wars. It's just a pretext to give the state more control. That's it. And right. I guess they tend to fall for it over and over again. And a lot of foreign countries fall for the old anti-American saber rattling. They say, oh, we're against the Americans.
Right.
And then they just vote for them automatically without even looking at the policies at all. And that doesn't work.
Yeah, it does not work. And when you look at the case of this government in Greece, the what's interesting is that they didn't there was a lot that they didn't actually promise. And they never said that they wanted to leave the euro, and they never said that they were completely against any sort of restructuring or looking at austerity measures in a different way. They were running like openly saying like there we will make an agreement that will involve austerity, and we don't want to leave the European Union. So and they were like public about that fact. And so and I'm not defending politicians. I think that they
It's just like Obama always said he was pro-war the entire time, and people thought he was anti-war anyway, just because his name wasn't Bush.
It's actually a great analogy that you're making, Ryan. You just took the words out of my mouth. I wanted to actually connect those two phenomena because they kind of set it up. I mean, Obama did this, right? I mean, he kind of acted like, well, no, I just have to say these things to sound responsible to the bad guys. But we all good guys know that I'm really against war. But I'm actually, you know, only trying to get elected. You know,
yeah,
you
people
let me
made that excuse for him. Oh, he's just got to say that. Like, he doesn't have to just say that. Most of the country's anti-war. Right. He's not anti-war, exactly. And that's why he's saying he's pro-war, because he is pro-war, man.
That's right. And that's exactly what happened with Greece with the debt. They said they were pro-austerity and pro-EU, and this referendum that they had just last month, where people, 63-something percent voted against the last package. This is kind of specific. It wasn't reported that, honestly, in international media. They were voting against the last proposal that the EU gave that was a certain type of austerity. But the wording of the thing that they, in the referendum, was not about leaving the EU, that's for sure. And it was not about rejecting all austerity. So basically what happens is that, you know, for I guess to like put it in a way that we can wrap our arms around, Rye, is that you have, just like you have, for example, in the U.S., you kind of have Republicans. This is at a different time in history, maybe ending in the 90s, because after Clinton, everything went weird. But
it's just
in the American,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly, neocons and everything. But just kind of like your fiscal conservatives, your like Wall Street conservative types would say, oh, we need to like cut Social Security, or we need to cut, you know, funding for roads or whatever. And then Democrats would basically say, no, we're against that. We're against that. Vote for us because we're against it. But then they would actually be the party that puts it through because they had public support, so they could afford to lose some support, right? In other words, like, instead of people having bread riots or whatever, you just vote for Democrats, and then you know, if the Democrats call the cops on you to like hose people off or whatever, then it's like people want to forgive the Democrats for doing, like, well, they had to. Well, look who, you know, it was the lesser of two evils and stuff like that. And that's,
it's okay to bomb Libya because Obama did it.
Because, you know? Obama did it, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, look, he was looking out for their best interest, probably. You know, he was born in Africa. They're Africans. I mean, he probably had their best interest at heart.
Yeah, the political gymnastics people do to defend their tribe is unreal, and you can see that either way. I mean, the U.S. always gives you two sides of the same side of a coin.
Yeah, right. It is. It is.
The left and right, like, isn't this and this. It's this side of the coin and this
right.
side of the same side.
Precisely. Yeah. You know, the Greek situation is such that, I mean, there are some other dimensions, and I didn't know like how far the rabbit hole you really wanted to go for your listeners, but the first point with this is that no, the Greek government did not sell out the Greek people. This is what the people voted for. And they would not, and most people who have extreme anti-EU views, and I say extreme not in the negative sense, but I mean firm, I should say strong anti-EU views, are actually split between the far left and the far right, and they will never agree because of tribalism and aesthetics and history and the civil war in Greece in the 40s, and then the military dictatorship that followed. And each side accuses the other of pure persecution because, you know, communist partisans, like, you know, shot at people, and the military dictatorship imprisoned communists, and et cetera, et cetera. And communists are godless, and the military dictatorship had good relations with the church. So it's like all these kind of unrelated to economics things, basically. I mean, they are related in terms of, like, consumerism and culture, which does affect economy, but
sure.
Just to kind of simplify it, you know, it does, it's not economics. In fact, the Golden Dawn party on the far right and the KKE communist party that is actually against Syriza, and they're not part of Syriza, and they criticize Syriza the whole time, they actually have similar views about how to solve the situation. And they have like different views about things like abortion, gay rights, and all this stuff, which are the wedge issues. But they actually agree about like nationalization of certain industries, you know, maybe reintroducing the drachma, nationalizing the central bank of Greece, you know, not just it being an insurance agency, but actually being able to be a sovereign banking institution that should be a public asset and things like that. So it's a very, very strange situation.
Yeah, I wouldn't reintroduce it. I think, you know, changing the currency doesn't really matter until you change your behavior with it. Or you just got the same problem with that currency. At least with it being part of the euro, you can't drag it down so far because of all the other countries that aren't behaving that way that are sort of pushing it, keeping it from becoming like a ruble or something. But
well, they're not without their own, you know, I would say I'm not like one of these gold bug people or anything. I mean, know. I don't fetishize, you know, metal currency, but there is something to it in terms of if you're going to do some like fractional reserve banking, you should have some, because it's like in the world we live in, they would expect, well, you know, you have some collateral, you have some hard metal in your reserves. And Greece actually is positioned to be the largest producer of gold in Europe. But a Canadian company owns the gold mines, and they could almost mine their way out of debt, not because of the value of the gold itself, but if they just, for example, had their own sovereign central bank, and Greece has the largest gold mines, they could have the largest output. Then they could just mine the gold instead of it being on the retail market through the Canadians, actually put it in their reserves, and then they could print like 1,000 drachma for every 1 drachma worth of actual gold and do fractional reserve banking.
That. Yeah, that keeps the fiat from going out of control.
That's what I'm saying.
There's a physical limit of the gold, and it also takes labor to go in and get it and everything. Yeah, that's I mean, it's one option. I wanted to ask you about the recent no vote, because how to put this nicely. The online press about it has been, they were offered a bailout, and they said no, which is awesome, because if you are already in debt, taking on more debt to pay that debt doesn't really solve anything. Just kicks the can down the road. How accurate is that?
Just the kicking the can down the road is very accurate. I mean, you just, you know, that part of it is accurate. You can't just kick the can down the road. But it's also, what I want to emphasize is that this is about speculation and psychology. Like all this money are just zeros on a computer screen. And if you like look through the field of this illusion, it's about control and sovereignty. So that's kind of like my talking point for the day, I guess, is that this is about control and sovereignty. All those zeros, they could like just hit delete on the keyboard and it'd all be away. But Brussels, what they need is a mechanism that Greece owes them subordination. This is like about control of people, and they're using like a big giant number of zeros on a screen to be like, this is so much, that means you owe us so much control. But it's about
control.
Look
at all this red.
Look at all this red, that means you got to give me the power. So it's just about power and control. And I know.
So instead of looking for ways to pay that off, they should do it Iceland style and say, F you, we didn't incur that anyway. This corrupt government did. Get the money out of them, not me.
Yes. Varoufakis said definitely he just resigned a couple weeks ago after the government went back to negotiate for austerity after the referendum was a no. And he had been put in as a finance minister after the election. So he's gone now. He was quite popular. And he had some, there's a mixed people, gossip, of course. I try to keep my head above the chatter. But what he did say that was very interesting, exactly what you said, is that you can't kick the can down the road, and you can't take more out in debt than you owe to pay back a debt. I mean, it's just, and the thing is that what he said, though, is that when he raised this point with certain people in the sort of periphery of the negotiations around the debt, they agreed with him. And they're like, yes, you're right. However, our mandate is such and such.
Yeah.
You see? So there's no lack of agreement on this. So it really exposes what this is about. And I just, and I'm not trying to get into like tinfoil hats and unidentified flying objects or anything like that. But I mean, there's another level to this, which is more about control, in every sense, like full spectrum domination.
It's not very tinfoil hat. I mean, just drawing off American politics, and that's just because I know it well. That's the typical model for banana republics. I mean, that's what the U.S. did from about 1898 to 1934 was all those banana wars, where small Latin American countries were basically forced to nationalize certain assets to protect themselves from this kind of corporate exploitation. And I mean, it's not just about tariffs and all that. I mean, it's just you're talking about very, very, very large markets versus very tiny markets. And,
right.
You know, that. Come on, let's be realistic about it. It's not a free market when your competitors are getting government subsidized for a variety of different industries and loan preferences and so on and so on. So because one side's cheating, so do you. I mean, it'd be nice if it was all free market, but it isn't. So
let's
play in the real world here and see and admit and acknowledge, like, look, they're doing that. So there, we need some sort of protection here. And I'm not for protective tariffs or anything like that, but I'm saying, like, nationalizing certain resources is a predictable consequence of crony capitalism. I mean, it's a predictable response to such a thing, and probably the best way out.
Right, right. And it's, you know, I wish we had a more interesting show that we could disagree on that point, but I agree with you completely. And it's not an ideological point.
Let me change it then. No, just kidding.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Hold on. Let's make this interesting. I mean, you can look at, like,
Damn it, I was ready to argue.
Yeah, no, it's arguments, you know, are great. People can sink their teeth into it, but I think
I had a nice one on the Iran deal last podcast, so I'm done with that. But yeah, but I mean, it's fine to agree. I mean, because we independently came up with the same conclusions. Like, it's the first time we've talked about it, so it gives me confidence in my thinking too.
Yeah, right. No, it's a good point to raise. And if you look at also, in fact, like, you know, the role of government in these things is such that, I mean, look, if you had a time of competition that was, like, relatively free in the sense that things are, I don't know, unfettered or whatever, then, I mean, at a certain point, you're going to get a winner, and then the winner is going to exploit their winner position and, you know, by lobbyists, or they're going to just, even without involving in politics, they're just going to expand their productive resources, and they're going to outsell and outproduce the competition. So even under conditions of fairness, at a certain point, as it evolves through time, you're going to end up perhaps with monopoly, and then the monopoly can enforce through
maybe,
lobbying, through government, through preferential treatment. Yeah, maybe
almost always monopoly comes because of government. And it's very hard for one faction to really be so much more clever and better than everyone else that they get a monopoly just based on fairness. I mean, it can happen in certain select things, especially like a brand new technology or something like that.
You know, with monopoly and government intervention, as we were just saying.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You know, you need, you know, government, you as you get close to a monopoly, you have a position where you have enough excess capital where you could invest into your company or diversify. You could also invest into politicians. You can also invest into lobbyists, and then you can use the force of state, which are, like, you know, guys with guns, to enforce the position of monopoly. Also, if the other,
like American railroads during the Civil War,
company, you know,
the Israelis today.
Right. It's all, those are great examples. So Greece, I think
And that's it for the free preview. You can catch the full 52-minute interview on ANC Report as a VIP member or monthly member. Please subscribe. We're also on our campaign to finance the Empire Unmasked. That's War by Deception 2. You can click the little sidebar there on the right-hand side if you're on a computer. I think possibly near the bottom if you're using a phone. But do consider donating. We have some great perks. That's going to finance the film The Empire Unmasked, which I believe is better than War by Deception. It's taken me many years to gather all the information and compile it together. So please support this site with your memberships and donations, and tell your friends.